And Monday has rolled around again. How are you doing? Welcome to the Richie Allen Radio Show, broadcasting live from Salford City. I've got two very interesting people for you to meet, to chat with today. It is Monday, the 25th of March, 2024.
Uncensored, unfiltered. You're listening to Richie Allen on the world's most popular independent news radio show.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, what would you do if your 12-year-old came to you and said, "Mom, look, I've had a letter from the local GP, a letter, Mum, which says that when I'm 13, I can now make appointments and take responsibility for my own healthcare decisions." What would you say if your 12-year-old said that to you? Well, a mum got in touch with the programme to say my 12-year-old had one of these letters. I'm not happy. There are some serious implications here. So we're going to talk about this with Corey. She's a mum. She'll join the programme this hour to talk about that letter and what it means. Mad, isn't it? By the way, I've obviously... What do we say? I've blacked out. I've edited out the name and the address, but I've put the letter on social media, on Twitter, and redacted, that's the word. I've redacted the names, but you can find the letter on the Twitter thing for the Richie Allen Show and on Facebook too, all right. And later on in the hour, or later on in the programme, Mark Bajerski will be back on the programme, great friend of mine, wonderful bloke, author, healer, and I wanted him to come on to talk about a fascinating feature by the BBC recently about imaginary childhood friends. We're going to do that. We might also talk about radiation or radioactivity and health. We might talk about that too with Mark in the second hour. And that'll be Monday's programme then. I think there's something in there for everybody. That's what I think. Hope you had a lovely weekend. Mine was grand. Twas quiet. Yeah, that's what it was. Lovely yesterday, out and about. The weather was absolutely gorgeous. Walked around the canals of Salford yesterday afternoon with the missus and the puppies and enjoyed that very much, just getting out and about. Now, before we meet our guests, it's time to have a rundown of the news. Now, you might be aware this afternoon, the UN Security Council has passed a resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. The US refrained from vetoing the measure, which it would ordinarily do. The US would always take the side of Israel and veto. It hasn't this time, which is a change from its regular, as I said, position, right? The text also demands the immediate and unconditional return of all hostages. The UN had been at an impasse, hadn't it really, you might say, since October, and the UN has repeatedly failed to agree on a ceasefire call. But it has done. Does it mean anything? What do you think? By the way, message me via the app, via the website, the usual way. The UN has taken its time. And the reason, you know, I don't know. Let me read you from the New York Times Saturday edition of the newspaper. This is a little bit depressing, and I don't mean to depress you. But it's just about the scale of loss of life in Gaza. Okay, so this is from the New York Times Saturday edition. Gaza has become a 140 square mile graveyard. Each destroyed building, another jagged tomb for those still buried within. The most recent health ministry estimate for the number of people missing in Gaza is about 7,000. But that figure hasn't been updated since November. I want that to sink in, if you don't mind. So they reckon as many as 35,000 people are definitely killed, half of them children. But they're saying 7,000 missing, but they haven't updated that since November, so it's likely to be many more, okay? Thousands more have most likely been added to that toll in the weeks and months since then. Some were buried too hastily to be counted. Others lie decomposing in the open, in places too dangerous to be reached, or they've simply disappeared amid the fighting, the chaos and ongoing Israeli detentions. The rest, in all likelihood, remain trapped under the rubble. After airstrikes, a small crowd of would-be rescuers gather... let me just read that again. After airstrikes, a small crowd of would-be rescuers gathers. In Instagram videos, the searchers, which are a mix of professional civil defence workers, family members and neighbours, can be seen clambering over and onto the dusty wreckage of homes and buildings to dig, but hope dwindles quickly. The people they are looking for are usually found dead beneath the wreckage days, weeks or even months later. The buried make up a shadow death toll in Gaza, a leaden asterisk to the Health Ministry's official tally of more than 31,000 dead, and an open wound for families who hope against hope for a miracle. Most families have accepted their missing or dead, and it is unclear how much of the estimate of those unaccounted for is already reflected in the official death toll. The continuing shelling, crossfire and airstrikes often make it too dangerous to sift through wreckage for the bodies. Other times, relatives are too far away to do so, having separated from the rest of their families in the search for somewhere else to go. Somewhere safer to go. Photographs that have emerged of Gaza's rubble heaps testify to families' intention to recover the dead someday. Omar Al-Riati and Osama Badawi are under the rubble, reads the spray paint on a tarp draped across the door of one blown-out building. 40 days my family has been under the rubble and we can't reach them, Salem Qasem said in November. He had fled Beit Hanun in northern Gaza for nearby Jabalia early in the war, 4 days before learning that his father was dead. That's an incredible piece in the New York Times on Saturday about the scale of the misery and the suffering in Gaza. The UN has passed a resolution today calling for an immediate ceasefire and an immediate return or release of the hostages currently held by Hamas. It's around about 100 to 150, depending on which estimate you believe. It is horrendous. There's nothing else for me to add to that, so I won't add anything to it. Okay. MPs who are thought to have been targeted in cyber attacks by Beijing got together for a press conference today, and they called for the UK government to label China as a threat. Former Tory leader Sir Duncan Smith, former minister Tim Lawton and the SNP's Stuart MacDonald say it's time for a new era in relations with China. Oliver Dowden, the Deputy Prime Minister, has been on his feet in the House of Commons in the last hour, telling Parliament that the UK believes or knows, they're claiming to know but they've offered no proof, that China is responsible for cyber attacks which accessed personal details of millions of voters. This happened back in 2021, they allege, but it was only revealed last year. They're saying it had no impact on elections. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has called China the greatest state-based threat to our economic security, saying, quote, it's right we take measures to protect ourselves. One of the MPs, Tim Lawton, who'd been allegedly targeted by cyber attacks launched by the Chinese, spoke to BBC Radio 5 over the weekend. Here he is.
China is a strategic threat. I think it's the most dangerous nation on the planet across a whole range of issues. You have to call them out, you have to stand up to them, and there have to be consequences. That is the only language that the Chinese government actually understand. And if you just say, oh, this is not very good, can you do better, please, then they laugh in your face. And for too long, we have not taken that threat seriously. I hope we are going to have some serious consequences. We need to have a whole raft of senior Chinese officials seriously sanctioned.
Yeah, what does that mean, seriously sanctioned? Now, I don't believe that China was involved in any attempt to influence the general election in the UK. Well, I tell you why. Because the Chinese are not stupid, no more than the politicians who sit in Westminster are not stupid either. Idiots, maybe, morons, traitors, some people call them, but they're not stupid. The Chinese know that it doesn't matter a damn which government sits in power in Westminster. It doesn't matter who the Prime Minister is. So why would China worry itself or busy itself with trying to access the details of millions of people on the electoral rolls? It makes no sense to me. And you know, I was thinking today about sanctions. Sanctions, imposing sanctions on a country and on citizens of a particular country is basically like stealing from people, but doing it legitimately, isn't it? Like when they denounced Russia's invasion of Ukraine, right? As they did, of course, they began to impose all manner of sanctions on Russian very wealthy Russian people living in London and elsewhere in the UK, and rather dubiously accused those individuals of being close to the, quote, Putin regime, man. So it's just a nice, easy way to steal people's money, isn't it? And in some cases, considerable wealth. So I wonder if this has got anything to do with it. I know it's a very small payoff, but maybe they've just decided, you know what, there are a lot of wealthy Chinese people in the UK. Let's just rob them blind. That might be part of it. I'm not saying it's the whole thing or even the most important thing, but this is nonsense, isn't it? More from Tim Lawton. They're all in it, you see. Every one of these leaders around the world, in my opinion, now this is disputed. Many of my guests who come on, my recurring guests, they disagree with me, and they're entitled to do so. Many of them have more experience in these matters than I do, but I believe every one of them is controlled vicariously. All of them. Putin, Xi Jinping, it's my theory, and I'm sticking with it. Not because I'm stubborn. Anyway, Lawton.
Because of what's been going on with this cyber attack, what's going on in Hong Kong, the security laws that they are completely clamping down on freedoms and liberties that we take for granted in Hong Kong, what's been going on in Xinjiang. I've chaired the Tibet group for many, many years, and they've been torturing and killing Tibetans since the invasion back in 1959. So I hope at last we're going to get serious about China, and then we can have a grown-up conversation that if they want to be regarded...
He goes on to say, if China wants to be regarded as a friendly player in the international community, China will have to come to the table and do what it's told. But considering the economic power of China, it's farcical for any government, particularly the government of the UK, to suggest that it might be able to punish China or harm China financially. It can't and it won't. It just simply will not. A number of radio presenters pointed out to Tory MPs today, well, this is just silly, isn't it? Because the Chinese are building a big battery plant, aren't they, in Leicester. They're spending billions on it, aren't they? And they're embedded in so many businesses and interests and industries here in the UK. So this is just a nonsense, isn't it, really? But the MPs, of course, didn't have any answer. What I found very interesting was hosting the BBC Breakfast radio programme, Rachel Burden and a guy called Rick Edwards, and this is funny, they kind of nearly did their jobs.
So there are a couple of things going on,
nearly,
on here. There are MPs who've been specifically targeted, MPs who have been critical of China in the past. But then there are other security risks, and in particular, more information coming to light around this attack on the Electoral Commission, where the data of millions of registered voters was accessed. Henry Zeffman, when we spoke to him earlier, talked about the fact that we're going to get more details later about who was responsible for this. And it is thought it was done by people with links to Beijing, but we don't know how much direction came from the Chinese leadership themselves around this particular attack.
The Electoral Commission have just said it's sort of unspecified hostile actors with links.
What does that mean?
Unspecified hostile actors with links.
Mean?
Not sure. It's fairly vague.
If you believe the...
It's fairly vague. So surely it's your job to challenge Oliver Dowden and Tim Lawton and Ian Duncan Smith, isn't it? It must be your job to say, guys, we're not going to believe this unless you provide us with some hard evidence.
On this morning, it's a faceless person in a hoodie.
Well, that's just the generic hacker.
Which is their standard
image.
Hacker, yeah. Go-to.
No face.
No, they never have faces.
Never a face.
It's I don't know if they actually know specifically who's behind it or have some idea of a location.
They're making it up, Rachel. That's what they've always done. You're nearly there, love. You're nearly there, and I don't say love in any patronising or condescending way. It's how we talk up here. You're nearly there, you know. Eventually, you're going to have to start asking these people for some proof, for some evidence. What's the payoff, dear listener? What's the payoff by labelling China as the greatest single threat to economic and, not economic security, but also security? The physical kind. What's the payoff here? I don't understand it. Could it be as simple as, let's just rape Chinese billionaires in the UK now by just pointing at people as we did 2 years ago and say, oh, you're close to Xi Jinping, we'll freeze your assets and we'll steal them, thank you very much. They stole a stadium off of Roman Abramovich, didn't they? They stole a football club from him. I mean, it's amazing. Roman Abramovich has got nothing to do with the Russian government. I don't particularly like Roman Abramovich. I don't particularly want massive oligarchs and billionaires running our football clubs. I'd prefer the fans around them, thank you very much. But I'm an idealist. They stole Chelsea from Roman Abramovich. Just stole it from him. You know, what have they done with the money? given it to Ukraine, have they? I have no idea. I doubt it. I doubt they gave it all to Ukraine. It is quarter past the hour. Also speaking on this issue about the dratted and the dastardly Chinese, Conservative MP Andrew Bowie, no relation to David.
The fact is that this government has invested a lot of time, money and effort in ensuring that our cybersecurity capabilities are at the place they need to be. We've increased the powers of our intelligence security communities to be able to deal with these threats.
Is that what it is? Is it just giving more and more power over what the intelligence agencies can do without having to go and get a judge to sign off on it? Is that what the payoff is? Or, excuse me, is this the reason so that they can say to MI6, MI5, look, the Chinese are operating here in the UK. You go after whoever you want. At any time, maybe.
And we will stop at nothing to ensure that the British people, our democracy, our freedom of speech and our way of life isn't defended.
Our way of life, our democracy, our freedom of speech. We used to hear this bullshit from George W. Bush. This is a tried and tested, you know, bullshit, basically. You know, they hate our way of life. They hate the fact that we have a democracy and we're also free, really. Do you think anybody believes that now in light of what happened in the last 3.5, 4 years? Anyway, Nick Ferrari, Jabba the Hutt.
Yes, I mean, I hear you and you use the word threats and I think that's absolutely right, whether it's the Princess of Wales or whether it's 40 million voters. And yet when I get to the city pages, I read that the Chinese battery manufacturer Eve Energy will build a gigafactory in the West Midlands as Britain races to expand its electric car industry. How safe should my listeners feel about inviting China into our bosom?
What? What was that, Nick?
How safe should my listeners feel about inviting China into our bosom?
Inviting China into our bosom. He said bosom. Nick Ferrari, Jabba there. Right, let's leave the China story alone. I'm sure you are opining on it. So Britain is struggling to deal with extremism. You can't not be aware, or you cannot be unaware, that a lot of news stories in recent weeks are being, a lot of time on news channels is being given to discussing extremism and the need to do something about it. Anyhow, Dame Sarah Khan popped up today. She's the government's advisor on social cohesion. I mean, this is proper Orwellian fuckology, isn't it? Social cohesion. It couldn't be any more Orwellian, that. The government's advisor on social cohesion. How do we get people to act like the Stepford Wives and the Stepford Children and just be quiet and acquiesce and ignore everybody and go into themselves and become little narcissists? How do we do that? That's what the social cohesion advisor is there to do. Now, she's come out and she wants to tackle, this is a quote, triple threat of conspiracy theories, disinformation, but more importantly, harassment that poses a threat to democracy. She wants to go after harassment, right? People speaking very loudly or shouting at MPs across the street. Now, they've taken a very interesting case to state their case, if you understand. And the case they took was this incident a few years ago when a teacher in a religious education lesson showed a cartoon of the Prophet Muhammad. This was in Batley, remember this? And people turned up at the school, irate. This isn't good now. I'm not saying they had any right to turn up at the school. They have no right. I think these people are religious maniacs. And I don't mean I think Muslims are religious maniacs, because not every Muslim will go absolutely berserk when they learn that somebody has drawn or shown an image of the Prophet Muhammad. But in this school in Batley, they turned up, didn't they? A mob started screaming, the teacher's in hiding. Not good, right? So they're using this example to talk about the fact that something needs to be done. She's describing this Sarah Khan, who's instructing the UK government. She's calling it freedom-restricting harassment. Threatening, intimidatory or abusive harassment that might make people censor or self-censor out of fear. Now, the irony here is absolutely beautiful. We're really worried about people or institutions censoring because they're fearful of harassment, says Dame Sarah Khan, when everything her government is doing, everything they are doing is designed to impose the most insidious form of censorship on people, which is self-censorship. Again, the irony is so thick. Okay, here she is speaking to the BBC Breakfast programme.
My report tried to investigate was, well, how was it that in this day and age, a man who was just doing his job as a teacher was then forced into hiding? And what was the response of the authorities and the local agencies of that time? And so sadly, you know, some of the things that I realised was that he and I both felt that the local authority had failed him. The West Yorkshire Police hadn't taken the appropriate response to it. And also the trust, the Batley Multi-Academy Trust, didn't respond with this either, effectively. But as I said, this is a much more broader problem where what my review is showing is that victims like the RS teacher is a victim what I have termed as freedom restricting harassment, where people in our country are experiencing or witnessing threatening, abusive and intimidatory harassment, which is then leading people to self-censor out of fear for themselves or for their loved ones.
The presenter then, a woman called Sally something or other.
I know this is a much broader subject, but we have just been seeing images of the protests outside the school. I know there were protests outside the teacher's home too. Why was he never the victim of a crime?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and that's something that I've raised. I mean, he wasn't recognised as a victim of crime.
This is very dystopian now. That is because no crime was committed against him. I don't like mobs turning up at schools screaming abuse because they're upset that he may have shown one of the Charlie Hebdo cartoons to the kids to generate discussion. I don't like that. But they didn't commit a crime, these Muslims, whether you like them or not, or whether you like their religion or not. They didn't commit a crime. And dispersal orders have been available to the police for a long time. The police could have turned up and said, get the fuck out of here now. We'll give you 10 minutes to gather your belongings and your placards and get the fuck out. Or we'll turn the billy clubs on you. Simple as that. So dispersal orders are at the fingertips of the police if they want to use them. They didn't. No crime was committed. Does the guy need to be in hiding? I don't know. Maybe Salman Rushdie might say, well, yeah, he does, Richie, funnily enough. He does, because some of these people are mad enough to maybe try and harm him. But do you see what is happening here? They're using this very exceptional case again to talk about how people's right to speak out against the establishment in the way they see fit on a case-by-case basis, we are going to encroach upon your right to protest.
I think this notion of recognising what I've termed freedom-restricting harassment and recognising that there are victims of freedom-restricting harassment, I hope we'll try to...
Freedom-restricting harassment. Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable. Orwell would be applauding this.
Address that problem. But that's one of the concerns that I've raised, that he was not given adequate support or provision. He was not entitled to the provisions that are set out in the Victims Code, despite the fact that he, his family and his children were forced into hiding and continue to remain in hiding. I think that's unacceptable, that in this day and age, people, just because of the job that they do, are then suddenly met with incredible levels of threatening harassment and abuse, and then are forced into hiding. And
politicians, for example, politicians, they shouldn't be harassed for the job they do. And of course, you know, the teacher showing the Charlie Hebdo cartoon is about the least of the crap that's going on in British schools right now. You and I know that. And it's interesting to me that she never mentioned. So that was an isolated incident, right? But Muslim families have spent quite a lot of time in recent years protesting outside schools, not because of religious education lessons, but because of relationship and sex education lessons. But no mention of this. And I wonder, are they using this very extreme case because they really want to restrict parents' freedom to come to school and say, you're not teaching this concept to my children? I wonder.
Just more widely, what some of my statistics have shown is that there are people in our country who are experiencing life-altering freedom-restricting harassment. So
life-altering freedom-restriction harassment, and she doesn't give any examples. This is mad stuff, Ted.
So in the last few years, one of the challenges that many schools have had to endure are shouting very loud, abusive and intimidatory protests outside their school gates. Many of your viewers may recall what happened in 2019 outside Anderton Primary School. And the
anyway, I'll save us some time. She goes on to say that the law needs to be changed. Legislation needs to be drafted to enshrine this in law, to put an exclusion zone around every school in England. That is what she's calling for. And the government is listening. So they are going to attempt to legislate to put an exclusion zone around schools in the UK, in England anyway, where you won't be able to go and say, I don't like what's going on in that school. It is 25 minutes past the hour. You're with the Richie Allen Show. I'm Richie, by the way. How are you? Nice to meet you today. There's always somebody listening for the first time. Mark Bajerski joins me later on. In a moment, though, we're going to chat with Corey, who sent me a letter that had been sent to her 12-year-old boy, telling him that when he turns 13, he can take responsibility for his own healthcare decisions. Now, of course, I've looked into this, and I'm not sure that that GP surgery had any right to do this, because I'm on the NHS website, I'm on the Care Quality Commission website, and they say 16. You've got to be 16 to consent to your own treatment in this country. We'll talk to Corey in a few minutes. It is time for a bit of a tune. I haven't a clue what I've lined up here. I do, I've got some ABBA for the crack lined up for you. Little bit of ABBA on the Richie Allen Show. Monday's programme, the 25th of March 2024. It is great to be with you. Keep those messages coming in. Music from ABBA then, the day before you came. Just before we say hello to Corey, and I'm looking forward to chatting with her, let's go through one or two messages. Thank you for them. Paulie reckons the demonising of China has echoes of the Skripal case. Zero evidence given to back the government's claim. The usual conjecture and whataboutery, seemingly to poison the well of those who still get their views from the mainstream media. Thanks, Paulie. Hello to Gaz, who says, Richie, we have a world government already. It's probably been that way for many, many decades. Everything is orchestrated, is how I see it, says Gaz. Thank you, Gaz. Richard has been in touch. I would rather have a nuclear war with China than we become China ourselves, with the social credit score, etc., and the extreme fascism that is China. It's a profoundly evil regime and must be stopped, even if it means nuclear war, says Richard. All right, Richard, fair enough. Gronje says, in a Ford car dealership in County Derry today, my husband asked one of the reps, how many electric cars did they sell this year? The answer was zero. Great news, says Gronje. Very good. Hi to Calvin, who says, sanctions on China has nothing to do with the attempts in the US to force the sale of TikTok, which is currently gathering pace across the pond. Details being, and then he gives me the details, you might be right, might have something to do with it, might have something to do with what's going on with TikTok. Good call, Calvin, it might do. Hi to Don, who says, we don't have democracy anymore. I would agree with that. Good evening, Pedro. China is our enemy, so we must sign up to the WHO treaty so we tie ourselves to them. Everything falls apart when two stories are put together. Clown world, says Pedro. Good evening to G-Man. China is set to become the world's number one financial powerhouse by 2032. That is the way it is. Any mouthing off from the dead in the water, UK and USA for that matter, is only desperation on their part. Yes, possibly. Like these messages, keep them coming in via the website, via the app. Shall we welcome Corrie to the programme? She sent me a letter last week that had been sent to her 12-year-old, and it is startling. We don't like to over-egg the pudding or ham it up, but it's a startling letter to write to a 12-year-old kid. Let's welcome Corrie to the show. Hello, Corrie, welcome.
Hey, Rishi. Hi, how you doing?
By the way, I'm very well, thanks, and it's lovely to speak with you. I kind of know you through social media, and I know you're a listener, and you're very interested on social media. Is it Corrie or Corey? How do I? What should
Corrie.
I? It is Corrie. We don't have to mention the lad, but that's a startling letter. Tell us about it. Did he open it, and then did he give it to you? And what did you make?
Well, no. What happened? I mean, he only ever gets birthday cards and a letter from his ISA bank account that we opened for him. So that's what I thought the letter was, from his bank account. So I've just opened it and I thought, light water surgery, what is this? And I've quickly breezed over it and I literally could not believe what I was reading. I was so shocked to read it. We showed it to him and he's a 12-year-old boy. He doesn't have any interest in anything like this. And when I said to him, read this letter, tell me what you think about it. What does it mean to you? And he went, does it mean I can go to the hospital on my own? That's basically what he said.
That's what he took out of it. Shall I read the first two paragraphs of it? Do you want me to do that?
Yeah, please. Yeah, you can read it or I can read it. I don't mind.
You read it. Go ahead. You've got a beautiful voice, so you read it. Go on.
Thank you. And he says, we are writing to make sure you know that from the age of 13, you are able to take responsibility for your own healthcare decisions, which can include making appointments and seeing a doctor or nurse by yourself. We encourage you to talk through any decisions with a parent or guardian, but we will always try to respect your wishes if you do not wish anyone else to be involved. Confidentiality means that your visit to the surgery and anything discussed while you are here will not be shared with anyone else unless we feel that you or someone else is at risk of serious harm. If you have been sharing a mobile number or email address with a parent or guardian, then these details would be removed from your medical record. Then written in bold, it is very important that we hold up-to-date contact details for you. Please ensure that we have your current telephone number, home and personal mobile, and that we have a personal email address for you. Please complete the enclosed personal details form and return it to the surgery. You may wish to have someone else involved in your healthcare, such as a parent or guardian. In order to do this, we need your written consent and contact details for this person. This will allow the surgery to discuss appointments, medical records, medication, and other personal details held by the practice with them. Please complete the enclosed patient consent form and return it to the surgery. This consent will remain in place until your 16th birthday, when you will be asked again.
It's amazing, this letter, isn't it? I mean, to send that to a 12-year-old kid and to expect, I'm not saying 12-year-olds are bright there. I'm sure they're bright, they're breezy, they're intelligent. But a 12-year-old can't understand the implications of that, at least not in my opinion.
He doesn't, no. No, I mean, he's 12 years old. All he cares about is his computer games. That is literally all he cares about. And I mean, if he'd have opened this himself, if he'd have got this, he'd have opened it up, read probably about one line, and it had been stuffed in a drawer and never looked at again or even spoken about again. So that's the way I'm treating it, really. I'm not going to contact the surgery. He's got no interest in this. But I do worry that if he doesn't write back to the surgery, will they automatically take us off?
Right, I'm with
you. I don't know how to broach this, really.
Yeah, a non-response might be taken as consent, maybe on his part.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's interesting. Do you know, I looked this up then, obviously after you sent me the email, and I've got a couple of websites open here. One of them is the Care Quality Commission website, and the other one is basically nhs.uk or nhs.co.uk, and they're pretty explicit that people aged 16 or over can consent to their own treatment, but not before then. So when I can't find any instance where something has changed. So this sounds like maybe the surgery's
really
gone rogue.
So I tried to look as well. I tried to look as well, and it's not very clear on where this has actually come from. And my first thought when we read it was, is this to do with, you know, what they're doing in schools now where you don't have to tell your parent if you feel this certain way, if you're worried about your gender and stuff, you don't have to let your parents know, you can speak to the school. I wondered if it was something like that. And then someone said to me, do you think it's because the boys don't get their flu jabs? And they're on a record of, they haven't had that, they've not been getting it. Is something flagged up? Because when it comes to that time in the school, the flu, the nasal spray they get up the nose, when it comes to that, you have to fill in, you get a link sent from the school, but it's an NHS page and you have to put in their details and say you don't consent. So am I now a flagged parent whose child doesn't get that? So if he can go on his own, they're like, well, I see you don't get the flu vaccine. I see you haven't had the COVID vaccine. Have you thought more about it? Can it be a coercive thing? And I'm not there. And my son's got dyslexia. So his written comprehension isn't very good. When he reads things, he can't comprehend things anyway, which is another reason why we read it together, because of his comprehension. And also with social situations, he's not very good with social.
Would they have known this, Corey? Would they have known that he has dyslexia?
It will be on his record, it is down that he is dyslexic.
And they sent him a detailed letter like this, advising him that.
Yeah,
And the letters
attached as well, like the consent form, he could probably fill that out. But then there's another form saying data sharing options, please complete in block capitals. Summary care records, SCRs in brackets, enable healthcare professionals working in different care settings to access an electronic summary of key information, blah, blah. He wouldn't even have a clue what that means.
I was wondering
if that's in that letter for him.
Would it be possible for you or for your partner to phone them and record it and be as nice as pie if you could record, not for me, not so I can broadcast it, but just for your own, for your own safety, to ask them, listen, where do you get the idea that it's appropriate to tell our 12-year-old that he can make his own health decisions next year and he doesn't have to tell us? Just to see what they would say, because I'd be fascinated to hear their response to that. Because as you said, and both of us did the same, we were on the same websites, it is 16, that's the guidance at the moment, certainly not 13.
This is why I wonder where this has come from and why it's, because I've spoke to other parents and they haven't had this letter. Parents that have got children that are 14 years old that haven't had this.
And you think it might then be, it might have something to do with
the jabs. I flagged up because he doesn't get the flu jab. I mean, with the COVID madness, he was in 2020 and 2021, he got about five letters. It was like from Ipsos Mori, but it was like inviting him, but it was addressed to me, but it was inviting him to be go on a trial for the COVID vaccine, and obviously they went straight in the bin. And my youngest, he got it as well. He's seven, but at the time he was five. He got one letter, but Riley got about five,
to take part in a COVID jab trial,
COVID vaccine trial. And it was from Ipsos Mori.
You know, they must have sent out loads of those, Corrie, because I heard from a couple of local people here in Salford who'd had similar letters saying they're looking for children to participate in a COVID jab trial. And they, I mean, this again, maybe I'm being a bit sensational, but for me, this is evil, because they knew there's no need to make any COVID jab for children. Children are basically completely untouched by COVID. It's sickening to hear this. It really is, isn't it? Imagine that. So they went straight in the bin, those two letters, anyway.
They went straight in the bin, of course.
Like you were going to say, no problems. Yeah, you can experiment on my two children.
Yeah, of
no
course,
problem.
Experiment, my little guinea pig.
Please do.
Go ahead.
Have at it, kind of a thing. Corrie is our guest. Huge response to this. I obviously redacted, and I put it on Twitter ahead of you coming on. And I was surprised, not surprised, but there's a lot of comments. And there's one from a lady who says this happened to her. It's from Rach. My grandson received this letter too, Merseyside area. Now, I'm his legal guardian. How am I meant to keep him safe, which is my legal duty, if medical care can be given to him without my knowledge? It's absolute madness. That's Rach, who's a gran, who's looking after her grandson. So you're not the only one whose lad has received. Yeah. And I'm guessing, if Rach is listening, I don't know if Rach will be listening, would it be the case that, like Corrie, you've not consented for the flu jabs and the COVID jabs, because that might be a common denominator then?
I mean, when I put the letter, because I put the letter onto Twitter, and I asked the same as you, redacted everything, but just put, has anyone received a letter like this? I find this really sinister. And it exploded. It went crazy, and I didn't even look at it again after I posted it. And then I had a friend message me through Twitter and said, are you okay, Corrie? And I was like, what do you mean? He went, well, I've been read the letter that you put on, and I've been batting off people that have been making horrible comments. And then I looked, and there were thousands of comments under it.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. I mean, but a lot of them, there were some people saying exactly the same as what we feel, but I got a lot of abuse on there, but it's water off a duck's back with me with Twitter, because it is just a crazy place. But terrible, horrible things that people were saying about me, calling me an abusive mother, keeping my child from healthcare when they need it. I was a predator. I should be looked at. You know, just you know what people are like.
Yeah, utter nonsense. Some of it will be genuine idiots, and then some of it will be bought, manufactured accounts and stuff. But it's still disgusting. You're basically saying, I mean, of course, this is the ad hominem attack nonsense. In fact, what you're actually doing is you're demonstrating love and concern for the well-being of your child. That's what you're actually doing, not the opposite. Let me read a few comments.
They try
because
to turn it. They turn it around. Like,
twist it around like you're
I'm
a mad woman. Yeah.
This is what a predator would do.
Yes,
a predator would do this. And it's just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, because a really good mother will allow her 13-year-old lad or girl to make their own health decisions without consulting mother.
What makes me
laugh
is when it says, like, you know, we need your personal mobile number. Who's paying for that mobile?
Yeah, absolutely. Who's picking up
the
tab every month?
Who's paying the bill?
Let me read a few of these, Corey. This is from Elizabeth. Richie, if a 12-year-old is in hospital with a condition, wouldn't he or she be too young to make treatment surgery decisions for themselves, for cancer, God forbid, amputation, or something even a bit more benign? They wouldn't be allowed to without their legal guardians being present. This is a great point Elizabeth is making. If the lad was 13 and he was in hospital and they thought, well, we might need to operate on him, they couldn't ask him for permission. They'd have to involve his parents, wouldn't they? So that's a great point. Let me read a few more of these. Jan, hello Jan. Under 16s can consent, says Jan, under the Gillick competence, but they're supposed to be assessed for competence and it's not supposed to be the preferred methods. It's a good point by Jan, but that's specifically for the issue of vaccination, not for healthcare in general, not for a big umbrella of healthcare. So interesting point by Jan, but they're basically saying to your son, you'll be 13 now, you can make your own decisions regarding your treatment in the future and you don't need to involve mum or dad. So that's not Gillick competence, that's something completely, that's basically saying you're a man now, lad, you know, you do it for yourself. And spooky stuff, Corey, you know. I mean, over the year, I mean, you don't have to get into this if you don't want to, but making those decisions. I mean, we had lovely gentleman on the show last week who decided not to have any more jabs for his very young child after jab one, and the surgery got involved and said that they were, you know, highlighting this as a safeguarding issue, which is very sinister. I mean, it sounds to me like you've made a decision over the years that maybe the kids don't need the jabs. It's the decision I would have made if we had children, to be honest with you. Would you have had resistance over the years to that? Would you have encountered it?
They had their MMR, they had their jabs when they were babies. I mean, now I think back now and I think I wish he didn't have the whole MMR. I do worry about that now. But I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I'm not anything like that. But I now, after what's happened after the last 4 years, I'll call myself an anti-vaxxer now, and it does worry me. And this is what I think is maybe this is where this is based from. But the reason I don't give them the flu jab is because I just think they don't need it.
No.
It's so rare that they'll get sick from flu. I just don't bother. And that what I've noticed, and especially this year, after they did, I think it was October time, the schools did the flu nasal spray up the nose, within 2 weeks, half my youngest class was off sick.
Half of them.
And I do wonder, and still now they're sick with this cough that just keeps coming back. I mean, I know the norovirus is going around, but then I'm thinking to myself, it always seems to coincide. And we always used to call it, oh, it's the back to school lurg, the back to school lurg. And I'm thinking, maybe it is the flu, nasal flu, that is making the kids, because they all were fine.
It's a live virus, isn't it? It's not an attack.
Yeah.
It's a live. It's a live. Well, they get it through the nose, most of them, but it's a live jab. So maybe. I do remember some years ago at a surgery in Fallowfield in Manchester, when a nurse spoke openly to me about how she knew about the program at the time and spoke about how lucrative it was for the surgery, for the doctors administering these jabs. And then the nurse said, the thing is, though, most of us, when we get it, we do get pretty ill afterwards. And I remember there was a receptionist working that particular day and she was absolutely smothering, you know, and I knew her from popping in and out of there, picking up the odd prescription. And I said, did you have the flu jab? And she said, yeah. So that's really interesting. And by the government's own admission, or by the NHS's own admission, more often than not, they don't predict the correct strain of seasonal flu. Isn't that right? They take a punt on it, don't they? Months and months beforehand. And often they're wrong, so the flu jab is a bloody waste of time in any case. I wonder if you're right, if it's about this, if it's about trying to find new ways to kind of encroach upon the family unit and say, no, it's not acceptable that you don't have the lad vaccinated against flu. Therefore, you know. But listen, there's a bit of dissent. I'm on Twitter, right? It's one of these accounts. So I don't know if this is real or not. Somebody calling himself Sir Richard Mountbasket. He has a Palestinian flag, so we'll give him that. But he says, why is there a problem here? You don't think a young person has the right to speak to their doctor privately if they want to? This is extremely important for safeguarding of young people. So that's an interesting take on it. What if you were a bad... Yeah. You're obviously not a bad parent. You're a lovely person. Obviously, I followed you on Twitter for a while, so I see you on there. But if a kid... If things were going on at home that are very harmful to a kid, might be nice to know that he or she could pop around to GP surgery for a chat, maybe. That's Richard's point. What do you reckon?
Yeah, absolutely. I have no... You know, I've got no problem with that. But, I mean, that is a lot of the comments that I was getting.
Yeah. But that's not what they said in the letter, though. I mean, if the letter was phrased such as, you know, we're writing to every child in the country to say, you know, if you ever need anybody, we're here for you. You might still be a bit annoyed by that, but if they put it in those terms and they sent it out to everybody, you'd be, okay, all right, fair enough. And then you might ring them up and say, look, you know, but they haven't phrased it like that. You know,
no,
they've said,
not.
You can look after your own healthcare from next year onwards. And that's completely different. So, yeah, Richard is blown out of the water there. Yeah. I'd love you to phone them and have a chat with them.
I think I will.
And if you can record
it. They're still waiting.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, because we got this in January, the end of January, I think we received this letter. And we've done nothing with it yet, but I will obviously call them and see, which is a lot of people have said that to me. But it's the amount of people that I have spoken to and are shocked. They're like, never seen anything like this.
No. Neither have I.
My mum, when I told my mum, the first person I rung my mum and dad, and I told them, and even they were shocked, you know, but they come from a different time, obviously, but they were like, what?
Yeah. At 13.
13?
Yeah.
You have no, they, you know, even, I mean, as I said, Riley, he's not, you know, he's comprehension and the way he is, he's a young 12. Well, he's 13 now. He has had his birthday now. He's a young 13-year-old, and this is the last thing he'd think of. If he was ill, he'd come straight to me. He doesn't feel well. If I say, do you want to go to the doctors, they like make any excuse. They don't want to go to the doctors. So he'd never even think in a million years to call the doctor on his own. He expects me to do everything for him anyway, you know, so he wouldn't do this on his own.
On his own, no. I don't know if you... I know you do listen to the show occasionally. There was a lady on with me a while back called Kate Deeming. Kate's an educator. She's working with the Scottish Union for Education. She's tweeted, I've seen this before. It's happening all over Scotland. Yet when the inevitable shite hits the fan, I wonder who is responsible for picking up the pieces. Funny that, says Kate. Yes, absolutely. 100%. Mm-hmm. I mean, the comments coming in on Twitter are, like you said, people expressing shock that this is beyond overreach. This is outrageous, you know, to write to a child and to say, listen, anything you want to do around your own health is your decision for you to make when you're 13. You don't have to let mum and dad know. Give us your details. You know, I mean, we can remove...
It's the encroachment of the state into parenting, taking everything away, all the responsibility away from the parents. The state will look after you. We will look after you. You know, kind of making the parents always look bad. The state knows better.
And it ties in with some of the stories we're covering regularly on the programme. You know, some of the education around, gender and sex in schools is... And I'm no prude. It's not appropriate for kids, and it's a program they intend to pursue. They don't want any sort of dissent from parents. So some of these kind of issues they blend in neatly. It is encroachment. I mean, that's outrageous overreach. By the way, funnily enough, Corey, I've had, without having a go at anybody individually, I have said to parents over the years, that if I had a child, and I speak for my missus too, my missus is the boss in my household, so I'm not the domineering one, but if we had a child, there's no way we would ever allow a health visitor inside the front door, ever. But I had an email from a lovely guy. I had an email from a lovely guy, and he said, well, my wife is really upset about this, Richie, and she's a health visitor, and you're creating a rather poor impression of them. That lady, of course, is free to come on the programme and put me right. I have no problem with this. But yeah, you got to be on. Before we part company today, Corey, thanks very much for getting in touch. This is obviously a very public service announcement. People need to watch out for this, because it might escape some parents. You know, it might end up in the hands of a 12-year-old, and the parents might not see it. So parents need to be looking out for this. So it is very... It is very important, yeah. So I'll give you the final word on it then. It's maddening, but yeah, a little phone call. And, I mean, you don't even have to be underhanded about it. You can always say, listen, I'm going to record it just for, you know, so that nobody gets their ducks kind of out of a row. I mean, when I record people, I generally tell them, you know. I don't do it without telling them. But just to see what they say, you know. Yeah.
No, I think I definitely will. I think I'm just going to call them and say, we're just concerned of what this letter means and why is it we're sending it to him. And I've spoke to other parents of children the same age as Riley and they haven't received it. Why is it that he has got this? Yeah. Why has he been flagged up to get this letter? And what does it actually mean? Because if he was to do this and something happened to him or he was having these issues and we wouldn't have a clue, can you imagine all these things happening to your child, goes and gets medication and stuff, and you haven't got a clue. And if, say, if he got some medication and he overdosed on it and you didn't even know, you know, you just,
you've nailed it there. It could lead
to so many awful things. And it's just, you know, and you'd want your child to come to you. And I know that he will come to me about anything, and it's the thought that he would go to them and not to me.
You nailed it there, you know, by the way.
Because he thinks that is what he should do.
Yeah. You know, for anybody listening who might say, what's the big deal here? The big deal here is, imagine a scenario where the boy decides he's going to go at 13 to the doctor and he doesn't want to let mum and dad know, and they tell him he's got some sort of condition. Oh, you've got ADHD, or you've got this, or you've got that, or you're a little bit depressed. Here's a prescription. Mm-hmm. And don't worry about paying for it, because you're exempt from paying. So they'll give it to you over the counter, and you don't have to let mum and dad know you're taking it. And that's not a ridiculous scenario. That's a pretty legitimate scenario, as described by their letter. You are now responsible for your own healthcare decisions. So that's. Corey, thanks for sharing this. This is important, this. I'd love to follow it up with you, particularly if you give them a ring and get them on the record.
Absolutely. I'll let you know when I do and what the outcome was of that.
Brilliant. And really good public service putting that out there, because it'll alert, a lot of parents wouldn't be, maybe would not have kind of imagined such a thing could happen. But they know now, and particularly if they've not had the vaccines and the HPV. So great stuff, Corey. Thank you. Great to chat with you.
Thank you. Thank you, Richie. Thank you so much. Carry on doing what you're doing, because you're a ray of light to me and my family.
You're very kind, Corey. Thanks so much for saying that. And we'll talk again soon. Bye for now. Huge interest in this, unsurprisingly. So let me read some more of these. Nikolai says, maybe Corey should get in touch with the surgery, request a meeting with whoever decided to send the letter to get to the bottom of it. Lucy has sent me a very interesting link. If I can copy and paste this. It's age 12, according to the information commissioner, says Lucy. My kid's school sent me this after a concussion incident. Thanks, Lucy. I can't open it directly from the messages from the app, but I'll open it up later on and I'll have a look at that. But 12, is it? But yet the Care Quality Commission website and the NHS own website says 16. So it's changed somewhere along the line, and they've not updated their websites maybe then. No doubt about that. Kay reckons, Richie, it wasn't just the kids they wanted to experiment on. My husband was given a COVID testing kit because he was deemed vulnerable to the virus. The letter accompanying the test said that if he tested positive, he would be given a new drug to combat COVID. We threw it in the bin, but I wish we'd kept it, as I cannot remember the name of the drug they wanted to test on him. It's evil, says Kay. Hi to Mimi. Marvellous to listen to a proper mum, says Mimi. Yeah, she's a tiger, Mimi. We like tiger mums, don't we? Jan came back to say Gillick competency was established in the 80s and was originally for contraception and sexual health. Thanks, Jan. I didn't know that. Now, you see, you learn something new every day. Darren B says it's ridiculous and worrying when a healthcare system is wanting to allow young kids, 12 years of age, to allow them to make important treatments that could, in many cases, cause them harm. It's ludicrous. The role of parental decision for the welfare of their loved ones, it's being stolen beneath their eyes, says Darren. Hello to Frank. Love you, Corey. Or Corey, says Frank. Frank with a C. Thank you, Frank. Cookie says it's 1 year in advanced ordering for the flu jab because of manufacturing. So many of them. They need to get such a head start. They predict the flu strain a year in advance. And the same amount of people still die no matter how many jabs they give. That's a brilliant point made by Cookie. The fatality rate, or the mortality rate for flu, generally about the same every year. So that's an excellent point. Good evening to Christine. Hello, Christine. Richie, I think girls as young as 11 can be given the pill without parents knowing. It's a scandal, says Christine. That is a scandal. Rob says, is this to program kids into trusting and contacting doctors after the mistrust has risen over COVID and the jabs? Good question, Rob. Might be the case. Emma says, the thought of a GP surgery reaching out behind the parents' back churns my stomach, gives me the creeps. The sense of the entitlement coming from the NHS is on another level. Who do they think they are? Asks Emma. That's a bloody good question, Emma. You're listening to The Richie Allen Show, Monday's edition. My name is Richie Allen. Coming up in a few minutes' time, not even a few minutes, is my great pal, Mark Bajerski. And we've got some interesting things to discuss.
Ask not what the BBG can do for you, but what you can do for the BBG. Support The Richie Allen Show now at richieallen.co.uk.
Right. 2 minutes to 5 o'clock. It's going to be a very interesting week on the programme this week. Later on in the week, I hope to be speaking to a professor and an author, a man who has written about climate deniers, a man who believes that climate deniers are dangerous and that everybody who denies man-made climate change is really happening is either ridiculously stupid, dangerous, or working for big oil and gas. Now, he threw the gauntlet down to anybody who would debate him on this issue. His name is Gerald. I reached out to him and said, I'll debate you, Gerald. And to his absolute credit, he said, yeah, I'll come on with you this week. So I'm going to schedule it for later this week or very early next week, whenever suits him. He's keen. He seems to be keen to do it, and that is good. I, of course, gave him the assurance that I'm not a shouty, screamy, idiotic presenter who likes to be bullying and bashing people around. I said I won't behave. In my private exchange with him, I said I won't be behaving like this. I don't expect you to do that either. So let's have a chat about the reality and the claims and counterclaims around climate change. So that will be interesting. And sure, God, haven't I complained and cried and whinged for a number of years because people who see things differently than maybe you see them and I see them, they're not so keen to come on shows like ours and have a good old chin wag. But Gerald, to his absolute credit, said, well, I will. I'll come on with you. His name is Gerald Cutney, K-U-T-N-E-Y. He's based in the US and he has written for the National Observer. He's a columnist and he's written a book called Climate Denial in American Politics. So that should be worth a listen. What do you reckon, dearest of listeners? No idea what song I'm going to play next. I'm just going to play the blooming thing. Mark Bajerski is limbering up. Can't wait to chat with him. This is Odyssey on your Richie Allen Show. Native New Yorker from Odyssey on the Richie Allen Show. It's 2 minutes past the hour of 5 o'clock here in the northwest of the UK. My guest this hour is an author. He is a healer, the founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He's a brilliant guy. And at one time in his life, he was a professional dancer. And there is no doubt in my mind that he would have danced to Odyssey's Native New Yorker. Would I be right, Mr. Bajerski, there in Mijas? Or are you in Mijas today?
I am in Mijas.
Get in there. Did you dance to that Native New Yorker? Of course you would have done.
Yeah, Dan Stowe, every song everything. That you've played is just like you're just attuned to my energy.
Fantastic. And I'm going to use a bad word, I'm going to swear now. You weren't just a dancer, you were a shit hot dancer as well. You danced you scaled the heights of that world, to your credit, to your absolute credit. I'm looking forward to a time when we can go to a nightclub and we can see just how good you are, or were, or are. Come here and I tell you, before we talk about two things we'd like to get through this hour, I'd like to talk a little bit about radiation sickness. But the BBC's wonderful segment about imaginary friends, I really want to talk to you about that, because I know you've done a lot on it over the years. I don't know if you heard the first hour of the programme. What do you reckon to NHS surgeries, writing to children aged 12 and saying to them, when you're 13, you know, you get to make all the grown-up decisions for your own health and you don't need to tell mum and dad. That's sinister, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if everybody now doesn't understand that we're in a spiritual war, then you're definitely, completely programmed to the system. I mean, for me, I've been talking about all roads lead to paedophilia, and everything that's happening, as David Icke used to say, if you know the end result of what they want, you can see how and why they're doing what they're doing. So, you know, wars are a great example. You have a war, then the children are dispersed, easier to handle, easier to, you know, get rid of, and so on. So I have a kind of darker view to what's going on. And I do believe that all of these things is to separate our beautiful children from. They don't give a shit about us, to be honest, do they? Let's think about it. You and me, they don't care, but they want our children. That's what they want. That's what this is all about.
Yeah. Yeah, when you put it as starkly as that, it's pretty much bang on the money, isn't it? I mean, right across the board, it's on the money. We'll talk about that in more detail another day, but I'm mindful of time. And before we get into kids and the imaginary friends, you're doing a lot on radiation sickness, and you believe that radiation sickness is a huge factor in some of the health issues that people are experiencing today. And Corey mentioned in the first hour, people becoming very ill with viruses that tend to linger around for a long time, perennial coughs that just will not go away. Now, the broadsheet newspapers have been writing about these things. They're trying to attribute a lot of this stuff to long COVID, which I think is a bit dubious. But there is a lot of sickness around, and lingering sickness. What do you mean by radiation sickness? Why is that playing a big part? And what is it? How would you describe it?
Well, if you start to do some deep diving now, you'll start to see clearly that radiation is becoming stronger and stronger. I've got an EMF meter here, and I've been using it all over the place. I had a brand new car, brand spanking new. Okay, it was for a lease hired car. Started getting the headaches that you would get when you have the new mobile phone 5G. It's that headache, that piercing, long, painful headache, and sometimes it can get even worse. I did a video live in Bali when I bought this brand new Huawei 5G phone, and I basically switched it off because I was literally fearing that something bad was going to happen in my head. It was so painful. So it's very similar to the 5G towers when they're actually switched on. So you get the same feeling if you walk past them or you're anywhere near them. But yeah, the radiation sickness, it's fascinating, because when we started noticing something was going on, when these towers were being put up, I don't know if I ever told you, Richie, but there was a woman walking along a street being videoed by, I don't know, her friend. And she started saying, I've just been fired. I think she said, I've just been fired, because I can't remember. It was a long time ago. I work for the NHS, and I work in the radiation department, and I'm telling you, I've been checking everybody who's been coming in with COVID symptoms, and they've all got radiation sickness. And I'm like, shit. Yeah. And you know when you feel something's real and genuine. This woman was genuine. She was in her 50s. You could see the pain and the suffering, that she's got knowledge that could help all of us. Something's happening on another level. It's not just COVID, there's something else happening. And I'm like, I'm putting the pieces together, and I'm like, she's is right. This is why I'm getting the pain in my head. So I started looking into it more and more. And this poisoning, which is happening on, let's say, a very, very low level, that the poisoning, the effect of the poisoning isn't just a permanent headache. It's sometimes a deafening headache, which you're screaming. I don't know, many people won't say this and won't talk about it because it's a bit kind of taboo, but there is a lot of rectum bleeding right now, and that is part of the radiation sickness effect. Anything to do with nosebleeds, that's another effect. If you're feeling really weak and exhausted, that is another attribute to this. Confusion, eyes feeling really weird and like you can't see very well. God, there's so many effects now. Blood in your stool as well, dehydration, fever, hair loss is another one. My partner suffered with hair. She never suffered with hair loss. And heck, this, in my humble opinion, all the effects, all the causes of this rampant new world that we live in, which is a toxic soup filled with all of this.
With lots of different types of radiation.
Exactly.
Non-ionizing radiation. You're always near a cell tower. You're near high tension power lines. You've got Wi-Fi everywhere. Going to blow your mind now, because to substantiate what you just said there, last week, and I mentioned this on the papers last week, last Wednesday, there was a House of Commons debate, a Westminster Hall debate, on access to migraine treatment. Do you know why? Because the number of people suffering with migraines in the UK has risen exponentially. It's risen at the speed of light in recent years. Now they're saying that 10 million people are currently living with migraine in the UK. That's one in seven people, nearly. One in seven, Mark. Now, I know migraine is not a headache. I know it's far worse than a headache. It's sometimes nausea and vomiting as well. But it's amazing to me, Mark, and you'll have something to say on this, I suppose, that they talk about something happening and increasing in great numbers, but they don't seem to want to know why. So let's have a debate about how we can get these people more access to treatment, right? All of these people suddenly experiencing 10 million people with this horrible migraine, but not what's causing it. That amazes me.
Yeah, well, that's a doctor surgery right there for you. That's the way the system works. That's the way it works. And I mean, my God, if there is more illness, more sickness, this is amazing. These are new customers for the pharma industry. I mean, why wouldn't they want that? Why would they look for a root cause? They don't give a shit about you and I. Yeah. They just give a shit about numbers. That's all they care about. On a side note, Satguru, I don't know if you've ever heard of that guy. He's been, he's all over the world. Satguru is like, he is the guru of gurus. He's just been in constant pain with a head issue. I mean, a really bad headache for ages. Then they rushed him into hospital and they opened his brain up for brain surgery because they were bleeding in there. This is the guy that publicly pushed the jab on everybody, on all his followers.
Wow. I didn't know that. No. Thanks for sharing that. I'll have a look at that later on. That's absolutely fascinating. Just before we come to the imaginary friends, I'm going to read out three or four quick messages about sickness and illness. Sonia says, I'm constantly signing consent forms, obviously declining. I decline. Every quarter, they're offered some jab or other, my children. They were shown a film the other day on meningitis before being offered the meningitis jab. My daughter was scared because we declined it, says Sonia. That's amazing to me. I'm not naive. I mean, I know this is going on, but every time I read it or hear it, it's shocking. Listen, come here and I tell you. I was listening to BBC Radio 5 Live last week, and I monitor, as you know, Mark, most of the output from Sky, the BBC, ITN, Good Morning Britain, just to see what they're saying about these issues. And they had a fascinating lady on who spoke about imaginary childhood friends, and it spiraled and spiraled, or snowballed, as they say in the trade, where people were phoning in and ringing in and texting in about their own experiences and about the experiences of their children. And at one stage, the presenters began to think, kind of like, is there something else going on here? To the credit of the presenters, you know, to their credit, they were like, well, some of these stories and descriptions, even though children do have very fertile imaginations, some of these descriptions and some of the conversations that children recount they've had with their imaginary friends, children using words that maybe they shouldn't know, you know, and sometimes speaking in context. So this got me fascinated because I've known Mark now for a decade, for more than a decade, Mark Bajerski, and I know that this is something he's written about, he's spoken about, he's given lectures on, he's done live streams on, the possibility that not all of these friends are imaginary. And this blows my mind, and particularly because I have no recollection of having an imaginary friend at all. But as a kid who went through a bit of trauma, I'm thinking maybe I did, maybe I didn't. I'd love to know. When did you start getting into it? When did it first kind of cross your desk? Was it a particular case, Mark?
It was my son, actually. My beautiful son. But me and my first wife, Jackie, we split up 3 months after having Nico. I've told that story before. But then as Nico got older, Jackie's new husband, Mark, which is Nico's second dad, they lived in pubs because Mark, who was also called Mark, he had pubs all over the West Riding. And so Nico lived upstairs in pubs, and he was kind of very familiar with all the people that used to come into the pubs. So he was like, his conversation wasn't really like a little child's conversation to another child. He was talking to adults. And anyway, I noticed in my son that there was kind of like an anger issue that he had. And there was a day we were playing football and I was winding him up. I wouldn't give him the ball. And then he just said the F word. give me the effing ball. And I didn't say anything. I went quiet and I thought, this is weird. This is weird. And it didn't feel like him. Anyway, years later, I started getting into the field of work of becoming a healer and starting to understand these things. And some of the clients would come to me and say, we've got a kind of an issue at home. It's with my daughter, and we don't know what to do. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't know if I can help, but I'll come along and let's see what we see. And surely enough, I'm sat with the mum and the little girl, and we're playing, and the little girl's talking, but she's saying things that kind of was freaking me out. For a little kid wouldn't say certain things like this, and pointing certain things out to me, which was like, how do you know that about me? And then they would talk of a third, another person in the room, and she said or he said, and like, I'm like, yeah, I actually believe that something's happening. And as I got into it more and more, I started understanding and feeling energy, because it's all about energy. Once you start feeling energy and once you start working in that energy, you understand if there is something else in the room. There's telltale signs. Your ear can pop, hairs stand up on your arm like you would do when you think about something really amazing. And the room changes temperature. You can smell different. You can smell something different in the room, and so on. But you kind of understand, right, that this isn't a normal room. Something's happening in this room at that very moment. So it's like, okay, and I go away and I'm thinking about these things, trying to understand them. And then I started realizing that some children were actually coming to my healing room, and there was nothing there. And then I'd go back to the house and then it was there again. So then I realized that, okay, so whatever it is, it's in the house. Now, some children, some little boys might come to me and it's with them. It's connected to them, just like it was my son. And I'm starting to realize this. Anyway, to cut a long story short, I said to Nico when he was, I don't know how old he was, he might have been 9. I said to Nico, you know this anger problem you've got? You know you're angry. He said, I don't know. Yeah, Dad, I don't know what to do. I just get angry and I don't know why I get angry, right? Now, he didn't mention anything, only that he doesn't know why he gets angry. But he got angry, and I said, well, Dad, your dad's doing stuff now, and it's called healing. And if you lie down, I might be able to help you with this anger. So he was right. Oh, yeah, yes, please. So I remember he laid down. I laid some candles around and started healing. But what happened was I started feeling something inside him, something around him, something that wasn't him. So I'm starting to now, for no reason at all, say, you know, leave my son. Like, it just came out of my mouth, please leave my son. Then I started to get more stronger, and I started saying that the light, darkness cannot stay where light is. And then I said this name. I said, Tom, leave. Right, when I'd finished, Nico got up, and after about an hour, he said, Dad, this is really strange. He said, when I was at the pub, I used to have an imaginary friend, and he was called Tom. That was the start of me realizing there's something very much in this, it's a laughable conversation to most people, especially... No. It is though. I mean, down the road here, there was a guy who came over here to write a book purposely on imaginary friends, and he was talking about the psychology of children and why they were doing this. He came up one day, because I asked him to come up to see this young girl. What was her name? I wrote it down here because I forget very, very quick. Anyway, there was a young girl, and I said, look, this beautiful young girl, she has, an imaginary friend. Anyway, he came to see her, and after that, he left. I never saw him again after that, because it blew his book out of the way because of what she said. It was like, no, that's not an imaginary friend when you're saying things. And she actually said to him, you've got a problem with your leg. And he did. He had a major issue with his leg.
This is amazing. So he was an academic. So he was writing about imaginary friends, on the premise being that some children have imaginary friends because either they have an overactive imagination, or because they're lonely, or because there's maybe some trouble at home, and to escape from it, they create a fictional little world where they have friends who are not real. So that's where he was coming from, which is where all the academics come from. But where you're coming from, through your own experience, and I've been doing a lot of research on this myself, there aren't too many people like you, but people who are working in your field, they say, no, in some instances, this can be possession, or in some instances, this can be visitation. This can be the child is open to spirits and can be conversing with spirits, and this is what could actually be going on. But academia has written it off as, for all the reasons I've just given, you know, child is actively inventing these worlds, or the child is lonely, or the child is maybe being abused or something. And this is where this guy came from. It can't be anything else, full stop, even when he was confronted with some evidence that, well, maybe there is something else going on here.
Yeah. I don't even bat an eyelid anymore with this kind of modern day science way of thinking, because they haven't done what I've done. They haven't been in the company of children. I could tell you story after story of these amazing things that happened. You know, it's like there was a young girl called Tara, and she was, again, she had, let's say, a connection to a spirit, whatever that may be. We can go into that if you want. But Tara asked me to, you know, would it be possible, would you like talk to her, because I'm a little bit worried, I don't know what to do, and I don't know if this is good or bad. So I went to the house, I think it was in Torremolinos, and I went to the house, and I sat with the girl, and she started crying, right? And I'm like, are you okay? I'm thinking, is it a bad spirit? Is there something wrong? Are you being upset? She said, no, I don't want mummy to go tonight. And I'm saying, why? She says, because he's a bad man. He's a bad man. And I'm like, okay. And I said, and is that you? She said, no, he's telling me it's a bad man. He's telling me it's a bad man. And I'm like, who? She says, my dad in spirit. I said, oh, your dad's here. Yeah. Okay. What's he saying? That not to go with this man. Anyway, I went downstairs and I said, you know, where's your husband? She said, oh, he passed away. And I said, are you going out tonight? She said, yeah, for the first time. And I'm saying, are you, like, is this a date with a guy? She said, yeah, it is. Why? I said, because have you told your daughter about this date? She said, no, I haven't said anything. So-and-so is coming around. And I'm like, okay, well, I suggest you don't go. Why? Because your daughter's just said that this man is bad. Anyway, about a month later, the mother came to see me and said the guy she was meant to go with ended up raping a woman in Torremolinos.
That's stunning, that, isn't it? That's a stunning thing.
Yeah, I've got story after story.
And there's
after
no explaining that. You can't explain that away. So you can't dismiss that, you know. You just can't.
And when medical people come to me and tell me, you know, that my work is nonsense, I just, like, how do you know? How can you say that? Spend a week. Well, I don't do it now, but spend a week with me then. And what happens is they disappear. They don't want to know.
You could tell them to read Healing in a Hospital, which is when they did their one and only experiment in the NHS on energy healing and found it was working and then just didn't do anything about it. By the way, there's some amazing messages coming in. This is for you, Mark, and it's from Alice. Dominic West, the actor, told Graham Norton, the presenter, about he had a poltergeist in his house, which was near a plague pit. And the poltergeist used to pick on the vicar. He tried to get an exorcism by a Catholic priest. However, there was so much paperwork, it didn't happen. But the priest did suggest having a children's party, which could settle the spirit. And it did. And Alice sent a link to a story in the Metro from back in January about this Dominic West story. Poltergeist was plaguing the local vicar. The Catholic priest, you know, you've got to get permission from the Vatican. This was taking ages. But have a children's party.
Yeah. And
what would you say about the children's party then? Is that some sort of other... That's just another way of clearing energy, is it?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I recommend as well. It's here on one of my notes, have a kids' party. And the reason why, I actually write about it and I've done lots of stuff about this. Children emit an energy that is like a battery, which is a positive energy battery life. And their energy is so powerful that it could literally, this whole street, they could light all the electric. It is so powerful. So when a child is on happy mode, they generate such powerful energy that it clears negative energy away. And this is what this is all about. This topic of conversation we're having today is all about energy. Everything is about energy. And when you start to look at the principles of how this all works, it's so fascinating that when you look at darker, heavy energy, i.e. if you are in a relationship with a husband who is abusive, you will create an energy in that house, which is basically like opening the door for entity and negative energy and trap spirit to come in. If you have a beautiful energy that is powerful and you and your husband are happy and the energy is great, you open the door for good spirit, which vibrate at that frequency. And that's how it all works. It's all about, everything is about energy, and that's it.
Must be a terrifying thing for people going through it if something, you correct me now if I'm using words or terminology I shouldn't be using, but if something dark or demonic is lingering somewhere, I mean, it's funny, I think I told you this before, I very nearly did an interview with the Warrens years ago when we were living very close to one another on the Costa del Sol when I was working at Talk Radio Europe. But one of them was very unwell at the time. And they, Ed and Lorraine Warren anyway. But I spoke to her, I think, on the phone for about an hour one night. And they've been the subject of a load of recent horror films, haven't they? Ed and Lorraine Warren. But it must be, I spoke about this, it must be absolutely petrifying, even for those who are used to it and who understand it, when you're dealing with something like that, that is, you know, at the very least, making mischief in somebody's home, but it must be terrifying, is it? I can't imagine it, to be honest.
It can be very terrifying. So the first thing, if you're going through it now, if you're listening now, the first thing I would say is never put fear into your child when going through this process. And I'll explain why. There's this analogy of the open fire. I like to use it. If a little baby, a child, walks up to an open fire, they'll place their hand next to that fire, but they won't place their hand in the fire. Now, if you're watching your child do that and you allow the child to get close and the child can feel the heat and they know not to go too close because it's a natural thing, they don't go near it, just like stairs most of the time. They won't fall down the stairs, but they'll go close to it. Now, if you scream at that moment when your child is going near the fire just to feel that warmth, you now have associated that feeling of fire to fear. So you have now brought fear into your child whenever they see fire. So this is a great example. The first thing you must never do is show fear or any kind of worry towards what your child's going through. That's number one we have to do. So once you've done that, then you go through a process. And there's many processes that you have to go through, which is look, observe and see what's happening. So the first thing you need to do is, like, is your child comfortable? Is your child happy? Is your child playing with this imaginary friend? Like, it was like they're just playing with a best friend who may have come round. It's the same kind of energy, Mark. You know, it's beautiful to watch a play. That is a good energy. That's a good connection. And that's probably because their heightened intuition hasn't been depleted by injections, bad food and fear through the system. So the child has got a great connection, whether you call it the pineal gland, whatever you want to call it, they've got this great imagination. The imagination is basically the doorway to the spirit world. That's why they mock the imagination. Oh, he's got such a vivid imagination. Oh my God, what an imagination. That is deliberate sabotage, because everybody who is in the spiritual world who truly understands it knows that everything good comes from the imagination, every creative thought, all of them. But that comes from, I believe, the spirit world, or the worlds where we receive this amazing energy from the cosmos, which is always around us. So if that's the case, then it's okay. There isn't a big problem. If your child, however, is starting to feel bad, starting to have nightmares, worrying, fearing, an awful complex, and all the bad things that might trigger them, night terrors, they might be sweating, they might start getting frustrated, they might even cut themselves or bite, or then now you know you're talking about something completely different. Now we're attuning into something that may be an attachment. It may be spirit trapped in between two worlds. It may be, it could be any entity. So, but you've got to feel, you've got to watch, you've got to observe, and you've got to interact. That's the way to do it. If it's the latter and it's negative, then there's a process you have to go through to help your child because of that entity or negative energy. But most of the time, what you find is the energy in the house has a lot to do with it. And if your energy is bad in the house, then there's a strong chance you can pull in negative forces. Hospital is another one. Medication is another one. Being abused is another one. So it's all about changing the frequency, either with your child or wherever you take your child. It's important to know it's best not taking them to really heavy energy places. And if you do, you have to cleanse your child with sage. That's, for me, number one. But there's lots of other things you can do. I could go on all night, but I mean, this conversation, Richie, is like 1 week from 10 o'clock till 5 o'clock every day in detail. So we're just skipping through things here.
Scratching
so
the surface, yeah. No, I've got a load of emails on this. I'll be really quick reading them. This one from Paul. When I was a kid, my parents said I used to chatter to imaginary people behind the settee for hours. Yeah. But I'm still talking in my mind to these same people, these entities. I'm 59 now, same as I did as a child. Like every morning, they will ask me what I've got planned for the day, etc. And I will reply in my mind, not out loud. These entities, I've always been convinced they're real and not imaginary. This is amazing. So this happened when he was a kid, but he's still chattering away to whatever these are, aged 59. What do you make of that?
Yeah, that's very common, especially when people used to come for a healing session or reading and wanted to know. That there's people out there in the world who teach about this kind of thing, the Dolores Canons and all that, and they talk about angels, you know, being by your side too all the time. I didn't see that all the time. So I saw, you know, spirit world coming and going, different times of different circumstances. So I have a different version just because I worked as a healer on people. And I used to say, oh, it feels like your grandma's here now. Oh my God, I felt my grandma was here. Okay, so there is might be something in this. So it was all about trial and error and experience and learning from my clients. So yeah, there's many a people that hold on to attachments all their life. Some would argue that we all have attachments of some kind. And sometimes we have these bad thoughts. Where did that come from? You know, why did I just think about throwing myself off that bridge? Or why did I think about wanting to kill somebody and things like that? Sometimes those kind of thoughts just come from nowhere and they could be an attachment. I don't want to scare people because it's not like you're being manipulated to do anything bad because it doesn't work
no,
like
no,
that.
No, this is brilliant. Hang on now. Hang on. Dare I interject if you don't mind. You've reminded me of Paul Golden, who is sadly no longer with us. And he was, I suppose you might call him a hypnotherapist or a mentalist or something along those lines. He used to do stage hypnosis shows and stuff like that, and he was very popular. He talked about this one night on stage in Waterford. It was amazing. He asked people in the crowd, he said, look, be honest. He didn't say we're in a safe place. Such a term didn't exist back then. But he said, look, we're all friends here. Be honest. How many of you have had a completely random thought pop into your head? That it was so bizarre you couldn't believe you thought it. You know, just like you said there, Mark, about maybe killing somebody or doing something stupid. And nearly everybody put their hands up. And it's true. Where do these bloody things come from? This is a whole other area of research, isn't it? Where does a random thought pop into your head to do something very wrong or very awful or very terrible? Now, again, the academics will say that this is just a restless mind. That's all it is. It's nothing else. It's just your restless mind chattering away. And you need to get on top of it. You need to learn to manage your mind. But you think, and I think you're right, that a random thought to do something crazy popping into your head is not a restless mind, it's something else going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so much going on that unfortunately the system doesn't want you to be aware of. They want to put it into a religious box and say it's fanatical. They want to put it into a crazy box and say you're all you know, just imagining these things. So there is no serious board that is recognized that we, you know, I mean, I know there's the spiritual church and things like that, but I'm talking about a board that people can say, look, here's the science, here's the truth. And even if there is, they're still shunned from mainstream. They just don't have a look in. All of these things that I have witnessed over my life, do you know how many times I've sat down and just pondered how if the world could truly know what's happening at any given moment, the times and the hours that I've spent wondering why people don't understand this. And the only people who do understand it are the ones who have been through the experience. And, you know, anybody that they go out for dinner with and tell, it's like, well, yeah, that's really, yeah, wow, that's a bit fascinating. But it's nobody really truly understands unless it happens to you.
You'd have to experience it first, right? So yeah. There's a brilliant and really interesting one from Mike. But before I get there, if I don't read these out, I'll be criticised for it. Kat says, I just talk to myself all the time and I still end up arguing, says Kat. Very good. Kay says, according to my mother and grandmother, I used to insist on a place for my imaginary friend at the table or in the car. he was always spoken about with laughter and love. I would love to make contact with him again, but feel I am too closed down, says Kay. How do I open up again? Now, don't answer that just yet, because there's a few more of these I want to get through quickly. Corrine says, what Mark just said about injecting fear in children when the parent screams if a child gets close to danger is really interesting. I recently met a young and very spiritual lady who had three children under five. To my horror, she was letting them run free close to open water without worrying about it, and rarely even looked at where they were. She didn't look back too often. She had this beautiful trust. It shocked me, but she was clearly in control, even if it didn't seem like this to me. That's excellent. From Corrine, very interesting. Thomas says, I saw the ghost of a woman at 10 o'clock in the morning at my kitchen door. One morning, says Thomas. Three taxi drivers have since told me, unprompted, that the building I live in is haunted by a female ghost. Corroboration, I suggest, says Thomas. And wait for this, and then I'll shut up and let you back in, because time is pressing. Mike asks, could you ask Mark, Richie, if dementia patients can have invisible friends? Now, he's not saying this in jest. He says, when you would walk into a room, my mum, who had dementia, would be talking and would then try and involve me in the conversation with whoever she was talking to, although there was clearly no one there. Now, sceptics might say mum has dementia and it is the dementia, you know, resulting in mum talking to somebody who isn't there. But what do you think about that, Mark?
Yeah, well, I'm completely the opposite of mainstream. I believe that we are far more connected to the spirit world when we're not in the brain per se. And when people say you've got dementia, what does that mean? What's the first image that comes up in your mind? Oh, it means that you're not in your brain. You're not there. And what, as a healer, what we teach in the Pure Energy Healing Academy is get out of your brain. Why? Because then you are an empty vessel to then allow spirit within, or you are attuning into a different frequency and not the brain frequency. So 100%, when people go into that state, they are more connected to the spirit world. And I have shared this with you before. I think I've shared it with you before. I'm not sure. But I had quite a lot of people who had dementia who their wives or husbands would bring them to me and I would give a healing session. Then all of a sudden they would come back into their body and they were gone prior to coming up the stairs. So there was nobody there and they were gone. And then all of a sudden I would say at the back again before they said anything, and then their eyes would open. And then a lot of the times the husband and wife would look at each other and cry and hug each other. And they're back again for, it might have been 10 or 15 minutes. It might have been an hour. It might have been for the full day. And then they go back again out of their mind, and then they're out of the brain and then back and connected into the spirit world. So there is something in this where you're just having a chat with somebody else. It also happens as well with people who are medicated as well. They're chatting away, but they're actually talking to. Normally, if it's heavy medication, it's normally entity. But again, you've got to understand that frequency, depending on what your frequency is the gateway or the doorway for whichever entity or spirit comes in. So if you are trying to get this room into a lovely energy to bring the spirit world in, you have to cleanse the energy of all negativity. And then the spirit world comes down to our level of good energy and are able to communicate far more easier. Or I argue the fact that you will be able to feel them more, because the dense energy in that room was limiting you to your feeling or empathy. So the same thing goes to, if you have heavy energy in a room, it's inviting dark energy. That's why the world, that's why CERN, that's why all the 5Gs are going up, because it's a disruptor to our beautiful frequency that the Mother Earth gives. Once you've done that, then you will create a toxic soup. And then in toxic soup, you're going to get toxic parasites. You're going to get toxic, heavy entity and a lot of darkness. And that's what's happening right now. That's why so many people are talking about this now.
Darkness is in charge at the moment. I want to ask you about CERN in a minute. I have a theory. And of course, my theories have no basis in reality, and I'm not being modest there. They generally don't, but I have a theory about CERN. Richard Kinsett. Hi, Richard. Mark. Hi, Mark. Everybody's loving this, by the way. I've had lovely messages, people saying they're absolutely loving the chat. Mark can be found at markbajerski.com. He's on YouTube as well. There's only one Mark Bajerski. You can hear people singing that in Mijas quite often. If you open your car window, you can hear people. There's only one Mark Bajerski. Now, Richard says, I picked up from Father Ripperger. He's an exorcist. Under no circumstances enter into a dialogue with demons. They are much stronger than you, says Richard. Well, maybe not stronger than everybody, Richard. Hi to Cookie again, who says, too many weird things have happened to me which can't be explained. Some connections in the ether, perhaps. Still love to have an open mind. Don't trust the science anymore, especially after the last 4 years. Michael says, my daughter also had an imaginary friend called Tom. I think Michael is wondering about that now. Hi to Maddie. Maddie says, Richie, marvellous to hear Mark. Fascinating subject. Never heard anything like this on air before, says Maddie. Hi to Jane Alexander. Hello, Jane. My mum has dementia and she can see when she talks to a little girl in her bedroom. I see the energy as well, says Jane. And a quick question from Mary before I ask you about CERN. Leonie says, Richie, can you ask Mark, some people believe we are born with spiritual guides at our side. Could it be that these children's imaginary friends, in some cases or in all cases, might be their guides? I think you kind of answered that earlier on. The imaginary friend is maybe not always imaginary, and it can be different things. It could be a possession, it could be an attachment, or it could be a benevolent, it could be a friendly spirit. So I shouldn't answer, you answer, because the question was to you, but I do think you answered that already. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, if I'm looking back on a story to kind of make you think, the story of a young boy that came to me, it was a fascinating story because he had this dog, imaginary dog, and it was like, I asked him what kind of dog, and he was only a little boy, and he says, oh, he's squashy face dog. What color is it? Gray. Oh, it's a gray dog. Okay. And it was like really fascinating because this gray dog was like his best friend. For it only just happened, only just started happening. So I went to the house and started doing some healing sessions, and I said, look, it doesn't feel bad, it feels really lovely. The phone rings, and I think she was called Grace. She said, you're just not going to believe this. I was like, go on, tell me. She said, the house is up for sale. These people came round to the house, and my son was playing with the imaginary friend. And the woman said, oh, what kind of dog is it? She said, it's a grey dog. What does it look like? It's all squashy. The woman took a photo out. She said, does it look like that? She said, yeah, it's this dog. She burst into tears. Her dog had just died 2 weeks ago, and it was the exact same dog that was in the house that she went to go to buy that house.
You see, I the reason I buy this, whereas I didn't years ago, is... And I know you disagree with me on a lot of, when it comes to the holographic universe. I know that you see it similar, but you see it different, and I totally respect that. If we are infinite awareness, energy, pure energy beings, as you've described us before, and we are trapped in this virtual reality creation, wherever it's generated, wherever it is projected from, I have no idea. But if we are, well, then these stories make sense to me. You know, that these are...
Totally. Yeah. I'll give you another one as well. This one was a beautiful one. I went to a beautiful lady's house in Belmadina. I'm sat there with a child. She's playing, and the mother said, I don't know what to do. She's now got this imaginary friend. And so I'm sat and, you know, just listening like you would do and observe. And she's playing around, and I said, who are you playing with? She's my sister. I'm like, oh, that's lovely. What's your sister? She's my twin. She kept saying she's my twin. I'm like, oh, that's nice. So I went downstairs and I said, so she's playing with a twin sister. And she burst into tears. She said, how does she know? She had twins. One passed away, and it was a girl.
One passed away.
How can science say that this is not real when this happens. And I said, have you ever talked about her twin sister? Never mentioned it, never talked about it, because it's too painful.
Like, it's worse, Mark. It's worse than scientists denying it. It's not even that. They tend to ignore evidence like that. They just don't want to even acknowledge it, because it's very difficult for them, isn't it? But when you hear a story like this straight out of the mouth of a child. Couple of quick comments, and then I want to ask Mark about CERN, because I have a theory. Emma had energy healing. She was cured of a chronic condition that had not only affected her mum, but also her grandmother. The healer said she removed a trapped spirit and believed that certain spirits can travel down family lines. I mean, this is amazing to me, this stuff. Billy, not to you, of course. Billy says, my late mother had very mild dementia, but just before she died, she began sucking her thumb and asking for her mum. I felt at the time she was getting ready to reincarnate into a new child in the next life. Says Billy, this is absolutely fascinating. Grace Lee throws a big damn squib on this, not on the conversation, but she says, my mum said I was a real freak when I was a kid. Full stop. You were a real freak when you were a kid. And Jake came on to say, has Mark heard of Bob Woodward, a spiritual healer? He's written a book about how good healing sessions with children. I can't understand that message, Jake, because I think you've typed it very, very quickly. He's written a book about how good are healing sessions with children, with a variety of specials, I don't know, and he's trying to demonstrate the part that spiritual healing can play in calming emotional disturbance. This is Bob Woodward. I tell you what, Jake, I'll have a look into Bob Woodward after the programme. I wanted to say something to you, Mark. It's a Mark Bierski YouTube channel, and of course, Mark's on Facebook. You'll find him, of course, on Twitter and markbierski.com. Tell me this. So they said, we built CERN in Switzerland. We wanted to accelerate particles, they said, because we wanted to see if we could create the conditions for the Big Bang, because they tell us that the universe came into being because of one mighty Big Bang hundreds of millions or billions of years ago, and blah blah blah, right? I don't know. I have a theory, which has no evidence to support it, that in reality they're not trying to create the Big Bang, that in reality they're trying to open dimensions. That's what I feel, and I feel that could be catastrophic. Now, look, I've seen a million sci-fi movies, I read a million sci-fi books, so it might be my mind, you know, this could be predictive programming. But I think they are trying to open dimensions. And there might be things on the other side of those dimensions that might not be great. They're trying to unleash something on us. Am I talking complete bollocks? I probably am.
Well, at the end of the day, what I've just said to you earlier on about everything is energy. Yeah. I said to you that if you have good energy in your house, you will create good spirit or love or healing or all the real energy that we need to feed from. That's like why you hug your beautiful partner, because it feeds you. It brings you back to where you're meant to be in an energetic frequency, in electrified energy. That's why you put your feet on Mother Earth, because you go back to that energy again. If you're in the energy of a house where people are nasty and awful, you will deplete your energy. It will be depleted. And the reason why is because you are giving your energy away to this new soup that we're now getting more and more sicker in. So it makes sense that if it's negative energy, then you will get negative entity. So when you realize that we're in a spiritual battle, the spiritual battle is to make you sick so that they can then live in this soup, this toxic soup, what feeds them and they're comfortable in, where we become weaker and sicker. And that's what CERN is. That's why all the modifications that are happening, the poisoning the soil, they're making us eat all non-foods. Everything that is happening is an attack on good souls in this world. And yes, CERN, I think I mentioned it to you before, I read for a lady who worked at CERN many years ago, who came to me only after I did the reading. She told me where she worked. She was a scientist there. And she said to me when she came, she said, I want you to try and attune to these two people. And she took a photograph out of these two people. When I attune to people as a reader, I can normally feel if they're in the spirit world or if they're in this world, because some people want to know, have they, you know, I don't know where they are anymore in this world. And I say, oh, I'll give it a try. When I attuned to these two people, I could not feel them in the spirit world or even in this world. And I remember clearly saying to her, I don't know why, but I can't feel them in the spirit. It doesn't feel like they've reincarnated. If they've died, I don't feel a reincarnation. They're here on this planet. I feel like they're stuck. There's some that they're nowhere. And I remember saying that. Afterwards, we went for a coffee. She never told me about this, but then she said she worked at CERN. Only 2 months, about 1 or 2 months later, I saw an article that came up on my screen, and it talked about CERN starting this project. And the project was to try, and what they said was something about finding the God particle. However, when they switched the machine on, two people disappeared from CERN, just disappeared. And I'm like, I wonder if it's them two people. And I started to look to find if I could see the photos of them, see them. And I couldn't. It disappeared. It had gone. And it did mention nothing about who they were. So that was something that I found fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
But do I believe that CERN is doing things for the health and well-being of humanity? Just take a look at CERN's opening of their train tunnel. And then tell me if this isn't Luciferian.
Do you remember? I mean, you can't argue with it. I mean, when I heard about it at the time, I rolled my eyes. You know, I used to have these arguments with David, like funny, playful arguments. I would, stop, everything is demonic, I would say. You know, everything is demonic, give over, taking the piss. But then I looked at it myself on YouTube, and, you know, even the skeptic, as I was very much at the time, I had to say, give over, lads. You couldn't be any more obvious that this is dark and Luciferian, you know. We've only got about 90 seconds left. I want to do two very quick things. First of all, thanks over the years for being a great supporter of the indie media, as you always have been, mate. You're an absolute diamond, and I do mean that. I don't say that. I'm not paying lip service to it, so thank you for it. Find Mark if you're listening to this show for the very first time, and you're meeting Mark for the first time, do get over to YouTube, follow him there. Go to markbierski.com. He's written some fantastic books that he's been kind enough to send to myself and Caroline over the years, and they are brilliant books. They're very well worth reading. So check him out there. Brilliant conversation, mate. We'll do it again real soon, and we'll give more time to it. I messed up today. We should have had a bit more time today, but I wanted to get Corey on to talk about that letter, because that's important, that letter. People need to know what's going on with their kids, and Jesus, the state sending letters to 12-year-old children. People need to know about this. But unbelievable last hour, insightful, and really thought-provoking, mate. So thanks, as usual. Final word to you in 45 seconds. That's been a quick hour, hasn't it?
It always flies by. I always get butterflies when I come on the show, but it's always a good sign. But you know what? I every time I listen to your show, and I look at Joe Rogan's show and know that he's worth like £500 million because of all his contracts, it makes me really truly see the truth that you are genuine. And anybody who is genuine never seems to get huge platforms for a reason. And that is because you are good. You come from a loving place. You are honest, and you are a light worker. And we love you, Richie.
That's really good of you to say that, mate. Thanks very much. If I was as good looking as Joe Rogan, maybe I'd have a chance. Maybe that's what it is. Do you know what, though? All joking aside, I like Rogan. I like his style. I know it's only to a certain point, and there are certain things they won't discuss, but I think he was reasonably useful during the COVID thing and with the jabs and that. But you're right, yeah. You know, people that are talking about these issues and what's really happening and why, it isn't me, it isn't you, it's anybody who's doing that. So it's a very well-made point, Mark. It really is, buddy. Thanks for that. Come back on in a few weeks, will you?
I'm always here. I'm like, I'm part of the furniture.
Part of furniture. I'm not going to get that image out of my head of you dancing to Odyssey's Native New Yorker either. Thanks, buddy. Great to speak again, as usual. Speak real soon.
Love you all.
Thanks, Mark. Bye for now. Mark Bajerski, live from Mijas Costa in Spain. As I said, check out his YouTube channel, which there is a treasure trove of terrific videos and live streams about all of these issues on there. Mark posts pretty much daily there. And the website is markbajerski.com. That's kind of it for today's programme. Thanks for listening to it. You can catch me on the Papers podcast. If you like the Papers, it's usually online around about 7 o'clock in the morning, or slightly before 7 o'clock. To be honest with you, I had a mad night last night. I'm not even going to tell you what I got up to. But I didn't think I'd make it to the Papers this morning, but I did. I made it. I made it. So the Papers, and then I'll be with you tomorrow at 4 o'clock UK time for Tuesday's Richie Allen Show. In the meantime, all that's left for me to say is enjoy the rest of your Monday evening. Don't be a stranger. Thanks again to Mark, and thanks so much to Corey for coming on and sharing that story about that letter. Thank you, Corey.